And good morning. Welcome to the KRFY Morning Show here on 88.5, this day of Wednesday, February 21st. I'm one of your hosts here, Chris Bessler, and I'm with my co-host.
It's Susie Prez.
Good morning, Susie.
Good morning, Chris.
How you doing?
We made it here.
We made it here.
That's all I can say.
Well, it's. I guess that's kind of a feat when it's as cold and wintry as it has been out there.
It's pretty cold.
Yeah, it sure is. We'll talk a little bit about that. But what do we have on tap today?
Well, we have guests in the studio. We have Matt Nykiel, Conservation Associate, and Emily Cleveland, Community Engagement Associate from the Idaho Conservation League. And we're going to be talking about the closing of a coal plant, how it happens, a little bit about Idaho Conservation League also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how that actually impacts us here as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So we're going to be coming back to that in just a moment. But first, let's talk about the weather. The weather certainly is something you can't ignore right now. We've had these really cold nights. Currently, it's at 5 degrees here in Sandpoint. Very cold. We do have overcast right now, and it's going to stay cold pretty much today, although it will get up to 24 degrees tonight. It's going to drop back down to single digits, about 9 degrees. And it's going to slowly inch towards warmer weather tomorrow. We're going to see a high of 29. It's going to be partly sunny. It's going to drop back down to 9 at night. Friday, it's going to go up to 26. Then the low becomes 21. As we get into the weekends, the high is going to get up into the 30s, low stay in the 20s. And we do see a chance of snow starting on Friday. Mm-hmm.
I do know one thing with that wind. It's not here anymore, so it's a whole lot different when it's 5 degrees out and it's not blowing.
Yes, yeah. So we're certainly better off right now with the trend we have going. A couple other things going on. Sunrise this morning was at 6:44 a.m. Sunset is at 5:16 p.m. And we have, over the course of the last week, with the days getting longer, we've gained 23 minutes of daylight per day. Yahoo!
Yeah, we're all happy about that.
Yes, we are.
It makes life very different. I feel different when I wake up and it's light out, or at least getting light.
Yes. We're coming up on a first quarter moon on Friday. Last night we had a pretty clear night. We've had some really nice nights with a little crescent moon happening up there if you look up in the sky. So that's been pretty nice to see. What else is going on around town? Do you know anything happening, Susie, that you want to mention?
Well, I know what's coming up at the Panada this weekend is the Angels Over Sandpoint's, what's that called?
You're thinking about the Follies.
The Follies.
No, I don't think that's this weekend.
Oh, okay.
I think that's next weekend.
Oh, okay.
This weekend, we're at the the last weekend of Winter Carnival.
Oh, right.
And there's a bunch of things going on. One thing that's happening is they were usually set to have the Torchlight Parade up at Schweitzer last Saturday, but they didn't do that because the weather was so extreme. So they held it to this Saturday. So Saturday night, that's February 24th, the Let It Glow Torchlight Parade and the fireworks happen at Schweitzer, so that'd be a fun thing to go up and see. And then another favorite thing that happens at Winter Carnival is the Canine Keg Pull, and that's on Sunday, and that's a ton of fun. If you haven't been to that before, we can recommend it.
Did anyone get to go to the parade last week?
I went.
How was it?
It was a hoot. It's the winter parade, so it takes the hearty souls to get out there. But it was really fun. There's a little parade right around the downtown, mm-hmm. and then they had bonfires and stuff happening there on 3rd Avenue by the town square. So it's just a great community gathering, as Winter Carnival should be, right?
Right. And I heard that last week the skiing after the big snow that we had was pretty awesome. Anyone get up to ski last week?
Yeah, I did a little skiing on Monday, and it was fun. It was cold, but it was nice dry snow, and it was pretty fun to have that sort of blue skies where you can see into the cabinets and see across the lake, just great visibility. So it's always fun to be skiing on days like that.
Absolutely.
And I want to mention another event that's coming up next Wednesday. There's going to be a panel discussion on the proposed smelter in Newport. This is the proposed silicon smelter that a company called Hi-Tess Sands is proposing to be placed in Newport. A lot of concern locally about that, about the impacts that we might get since we're downwind from the location where this smelter would be. And that's going to be from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. in the Panada Theater. There's going to be a number of folks that are kind of involved in the issue. One is going to be Matt from ICL. It's going to be one of the panel discussion members. But also we're going to have people from the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality, as well as the Washington Department of Ecology. And someone from the Kalispell Tribe is going to be on the panel discussion. HITEST itself, although invited to the panel, isn't going to make it. But there'll be good information about what we know about the proposal at this time and what the steps are for this proposal to go forward. And there will be questions for the panel to answer. The public will have an opportunity to weigh in as well. It'll be a moderated format.
It's always a good opportunity. It's always great to get information, and this opportunity really affords that. It is, again, next Wednesday, the 28th, at the Panada from 5:30 to 7:30.
That's right. And, of course, there's a ton of other things going on around our town. If you want to see what's happening in town and get more details, anything we've mentioned here, go to the community calendars that we have on our website, krfy.org, or go to sandpointonline.com, which compiles those calendars, either place, to find out what's happening in town. And with that, Susie, let's get into today's topic.
All right. Well, Matt Nikhil and Emily Cleveland from Idaho Conservation League, again, thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, you know, we have new listeners all the time, so we might as well look at a little picture of what Idaho Conservation League, the mission and vision. Just from your website, I'll just read something. The Idaho Conservation League works to protect the air you breathe, the water you drink, and the land you love. But I'm sure there's more to it. Let's hear a little bit briefly just to bring our listeners up to speed.
Sure. So one way that I think about it is that ICL works to protect what we love about Idaho and the lifestyle that we have here in Idaho. So that's everything from making sure that our access to public lands remains, that we have responsible uses on our public lands, to making sure our air and water are of, you know, aren't being polluted, and making sure that all the permitting that goes in is reasonable and sound. And so Matt works on some of that up here. And there's been some interesting projects. For example, an elementary school over in Hope, there was, well, actually, Matt, do you want to talk about that? I think it's kind of a nice project to kind of exemplify some of the work that we do.
Yeah, just in brief, there was some permitting that we were tracking, and there's always a public comment period whenever a permit's going to be reissued or renewed. And we suggested some recommendations that, because of the proximity of the water discharge that was going to be taking place, the proximity to the school, that the permit restrictions should be strict and should be protective. And so we made a recommendation, and Idaho Department of Environmental Quality took that into consideration and made the permit stricter for those reasons. They relooked at you know, the facts behind the permit and saw that, yeah, this would be a good action to take. We should make sure that water quality is very, very highly protected around the school.
Yeah. So, you know, that situation in particular, that comment that Matt made in the permit made a difference to the well water that the Hope Elementary School was using. So things like that just really protect the quality of life that we enjoy here. And it's good to have someone looking at all those wonky pieces of information that that isn't always so enjoyable for the casual person to look at. So thanks to Matt for that one. Mm-hmm. And ICL also works on trail connectivity. The Pendere Bay Trail is a popular asset to our community now. And that was really spearheaded by our predecessors, Nancy Dooley and Susan Drumheller, and they were instrumental in getting that going. But that's an example of Idaho Conservation League's commitment to trying to improve walkability and, you know, just your quality of life, access to the natural resources. A lakefront trail is great for not only our community and our economy, but also just your quality of life living here, being able to enjoy those natural resources up front and walk along that lakeshore. So that's a little touch of some of the projects that we've done in this area. And, you know, protecting our environment can sort of be this big umbrella of work. And so there's all kinds of things that fall underneath it. But I think really just protecting the lands we love, the public lands, our air and water quality, and then just sustainability is the big things that we focus on.
Well, we'll get to the subject at hand today. It's about a coal plant, and it's at Coal Strip in Montana. But to start out, this hasn't just one coal plant. This has been ongoing for decades for Idaho Conservation League. And on the blog, on the website, it says, moving towards an alternative energy future. And this was from the Idaho Public Utilities Commission. And it said, two stopped, two closing, and two more to go. So it's been ongoing for decades. So where are we at? How is the partnership? How does that work? It's not just Idaho Conservation League. Just bring us up to date.
Sure.
On coal plants.
Yeah. So Idaho itself doesn't have any coal resources, but we import a lot of energy from other states. And so a lot of that energy that Idaho imports is coal energy. And the three biggest public utilities in Idaho are Rocky Mountain Power, Idaho Power, and then Avista up here in the north. And so Rocky Mountain Power makes up about 22.6% of Idaho's coal power. Idaho Power is the biggest coal user. It's got about 60%. And then Avista, about 16%. So that's kind of based on how much of the state they're serving and how much coal is in their portfolio. But all of those utilities are seeing that the coal plants just aren't good choices for their business plans and for their customers' bottom lines. And we see that playing out across the country. But for example, with Idaho Power, Idaho Conservation League has been a part of several negotiations in the past 5-10 years to find early retirement dates for plants like the Boardman plant, the Valmy plant, which is in Nevada. And, through ICL's involvement with the Idaho Public Utilities Commission, the utility itself, and then sometimes there's other partners as well, they can really look at the needs of the utility and what they're getting from that coal resource and figure out if that's really the best choice for the customers. And in the case of Valmy, they found that it would actually save customers $103 million over a decade to close that plant a decade early. So in some cases, it can have a really big effect on, just really lightening the load on people's energy bills when there's someone who's really examining what kind of energy people are using and making sure that it's the best choice for ratepayers. So, as renewable energy technology improves, the cost of renewable energy is dropping significantly, which is making it much more competitive and is making coal increasingly expensive. And then similarly, the cost of natural gas is really low. And so that's been really driving coal out as well. So the energy market is really the driver in terms of the fate that coal has been seeing across the country. So a lot of the coal plants that are supplying Idaho are starting to see retirement dates pop up on the horizon. But up here in North Idaho, Avista is a partial owner of a coal plant in Montana called Coal Strip. And that plant is a specific concern to us because it's one of the largest contributors to global climate change in the country. It's number one in the American West. So it's the biggest emitter of greenhouse gas emissions in the American West at about over 14 million tons per year. So, we have a small ownership. Avista has a small ownership stake in that, but every month we're paying our bills and that's going to this plant to prop it up and continue it. And so not only is that bad for our climate, but it's also bad for our bottom line because we believe that there's more affordable energy options out there. And so we're working with the Idaho Public Utilities Commission and Avista to keep advocating that we are continually looking at that and making sure that it's always the best choice for ratepayers and for Idaho.
Just a quick question, because Avista has a partial ownership in Coal Strip, mm-hmm. is that a conflict of interest in divesting or closing it down?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great example, or that's a great question. So, as an owner, they've put an investment into this plant, and they hope to recoup that investment over a period of time. And so ideally, that stretches as long as possible. They can you know, they can just continue to recoup that investment and not have to build something new. And so it, you know, it, in some ways it benefits them to continue, but there's also complexities in how the rates are structured where it wouldn't, it's not necessarily a conflict of interest for them. It's just a change in how they're doing things now. And sometimes that just, you know, that just needs a voice from the public speaking up and saying, hey, you know, we'd like to see this direction taken from the company. But it's pretty usual for utilities to own their own generating facilities or to own their a stake in a plant. So, for example, Avista owns several dams that provides a lot of the hydropower. And that's just how utilities operate, and it tends to just be good business plan for them. And Matt, I don't know if there's anything you want to add there.
No, I think that's great.
Okay. So to clarify, Avista is withdrawing its stake in the plant, or is the plant entirely closing?
Oh, yeah. So Colstrip is made up of two units. There's an older unit that was made in the 70s, and there's a newer unit.
Four units.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's four units. One and two were made in the 70s, and three and four were made in the 1980s. So the older units will be closing. There's a closure date for that, and Matt can talk a little bit more about why those will be closing early. The newer units are still going, and that's the piece that Avista has ownership in, three and four. They have a 15% ownership stake in that. However, there's six owners altogether, so it's a really complex puzzle because you really need all the utilities to be thinking along the same lines and agreeing about when they think that this asset is not going to be economically beneficial anymore. So Avista has no plans to pull out of Colstrip at this point. Their most recent resource plan said that they see it being economical for at least the next 20 years. Our goal is to, you know, they do these 20-year resource plans every 2 years, and so we hope that that they'll be able to find that there's better options for energy between now and 2037.
So the resistance, so to speak, is based on economic viability and feasibility for a company. But these alternative clean or whatever, it could be natural gas, mm-hmm. alternatives to keeping that open have to be explored. And who's doing that exploration for on behalf of closing this plant?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I might just back up a little mm-hmm. bit and say that just as like a primer, right? Avista is a public utility, and another way of saying that in this case is they're a publicly regulated monopoly, right? When oftentimes, I don't know, is KRFY an Avista bill payer?
Our electric bill, do we pay to Avista?
No, we have an agreement with the owners here.
Okay. What's included, but I think Avista does provide electricity to the downtown.
So
this is, we're being powered right now by this
right.
electricity.
Right. So we are, most of the time, most of us in Sandpoint, if you are a renter or a homeowner, you don't generally have a choice in where you get your electricity from because Avista is a monopoly and they have all this structure built out. And over the years, state governments and federal and state agencies have agreed that, yes, it makes sense when you have all this structure to have one company own it and to have a regulated monopoly. But that means that even though that Avista has this, they have no competition, they have to go to our Idaho State Public Utilities Commission to ask for when they want a rate increase, when they want to build out new energy facilities. And because they have to ask our commission, that gives us a voice, the public, a role to play in shaping where we get our energy from. So we have a role to play, we have to speak up when we want to shape where our energy is coming from. And so that's kind of like the groundwork of public utilities and where Avista is coming from. And so that's why it's so important when we see there's a potential issue with Colstrip. One, we may be able to get cheaper energy, and two, it's a really polluting facility and one of the largest greenhouse gas emitters in the West, like Emily brought up.
So what role does the Idaho Public Utilities Commission play in deciding where our electricity comes from?
The Idaho Public Utilities Commission is also called the PUC. They generally take the perspective, or their standard of review is whatever decision they make, or whatever decision that a utility makes, has to be in the public interest, and it has to maintain that power is going to be provided reliably and consistently and at low cost. That's generally the parameters. What we have found, and primarily from our advocate in Boise, Ben Otto, who does a lot of our work with the Public Utilities Commission, is that when you look at the numbers, electricity from coal is not going to lead you in the public interest, and it's not going to be affordable electricity as you might find with renewable energy or conservation, just using less energy. Utilities have often found that if we just increase conservation measures, so more efficient light bulbs, weatherization of your homes, we can actually just prevent altogether the need to build out more facilities or to generate energy from the coal plant. We can just keep it running low because we're actually not using as much, or we're conserving the energy.
Does the Idaho PUC have a posture on renewable energy? Do they say, yeah, we want to try to trend towards renewable energy, or is it strictly driven by rate?
To my knowledge, I don't think they have any statutory or regulatory guidelines or languages saying that the commission shall incorporate X amount of renewable energy or should promote that. To my knowledge, they are strictly, their charge is to look out for the public interest and to keep energy reliable, consistent, and affordable.
Mm-hmm. So if other forms of energy are probably more profitable because Avista is a company, why the resistance to even thinking about or talking about, they're saying 30 years or 20 years, they see it as profitable when there's alternatives that might be more so. What's the resistance, and what role does Idaho Conservation League play in trying to bring this around?
You know, it's really hard to tell why Avista is resisting this, because many of the utility owners of Colstrip are already making plans to get out because, one, their customers don't want that electricity. They think it's too polluting and it's accelerating climate change. And two, they're finding cheaper ways of getting it. So Puget Sound Energy is a major shareholder in Colstrip. They are making plans to get out fast. Portland General Electric, the state of Oregon has already passed a law saying we are not going to distribute coal electricity in our state by 2030. And to be more specific, going back to Puget Sound, they're making plans to get out of Colstrip by 2027. And so it's really unclear why Avista is not aligning itself in a similar way. I can only speculate, but I think right now, one thing, as you may know, a Canadian distribution company is in the process of buying Avista out. And, you know, maybe Avista doesn't kind of want to rock the boat by saying we're going to change the way we get electricity by planning a retirement of Colstrip. I don't really know. It's really hard to tell why there's so much resistance to retiring Colstrip and building something that could be more affordable for Idahoans and could be a lot cleaner facility.
Well, you just mentioned the company. Is that called Hydro One? Well, let's get back to that in just a minute. I want to remind our listeners, if you've just tuned in, this is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie here at 88.5 KRFY. And that's what you're listening to. We're here with Emily Cleveland and Matt Nykiel from Idaho Conservation League talking about closing a coal plant, and we're moving into the discussion about possible purchase of that coal, of the Avista's share of that coal plant from Hydro One. And there's a petition out, and as you said, or at least what I read, it's a good opportunity, possibly if that sale goes through, for citizens here to have influence on their future decision making. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know, this is one of the most complex coal plant issues, just because there are so many players. We've got six owners of Colstrip. Colstrip is in Montana, and then those owners supply customers in Washington, Idaho, Oregon, and a small portion in Montana as well. So there's a huge geographic area that this plant is serving, and there's a lot of owners. But in this case, Hydro One would be buying Avista, the entire company. So they would have ownership of all of Avista's assets, including their share in Colstrip, but also including all of their dams, all of their ownership of transmission lines, all of those things. So it would just be an acquisition from this other company. And so it's a big deal. And as Matt said, the Public Utilities Commission basically is here to protect the interest of the ratepayers, because we don't have a choice in who we're getting our electricity from. And so the public utility is there to make sure that although ratepayers can't choose, they're making sure that the energy we're getting is fair. And as such, they're allowed to approve or deny this acquisition from Hydro One. The same goes for the utilities commissions in Washington and Oregon as well. So there's a bunch of opportunities in these different states that are getting served by Avista to be able to speak up on this issue about Hydro One purchasing. And it's an interesting situation for coal, especially because Hydro One actually serves Ontario, which has been coal-free since 2014. So they're, you know, right now they're operating on a system of supplying coal-free energy to their customers, and they're a little bit different in that they don't have assets themselves. They just provide the energy from other producers. But with this this acquisition of Avista, they would have access to all of Avista's assets and all of their transmission lines and that sort of thing. So it would be a great thing for Hydro One. They would really expand their assets and their territory and their region. So they're hoping that this sale will go through. For people in Ontario, I think there's some frustration that now their rates could be going towards a coal plant when they spent a long time fighting for coal-free energy in Ontario. And for us on this side of the border, you know, we definitely want to make sure that when this sale goes through, that it's in the best interest of us in Idaho here and us ratepayers. And so the Public Utilities Commission is really the group that's going to be looking out for the interest of Idahoans. And so Matt's going to be advocating on behalf of ICL and our interests to the PUC to make sure that the concerns that we have for affordable rates and rates that are, you know, are from sources that protect Idaho's environment are taken into account. And yeah, I don't know if you want to build off that at all.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'd just add is in the case of an acquisition like this, the Idaho Public Utilities Commission is charged to look for three primary things: that the transaction, the acquisition, is consistent with the public interest, that the acquisition won't cause the cost of rates for supplying electricity to increase, and that the company that would be acquiring the utility, so Hydro One, has the intent and financial ability to operate and maintain Avista operations in Idaho. So those are all, that's all part of their standard of review that provides an opportunity for folks in Idaho to speak up and say, hey, if this acquisition is going to go through, like, make sure you hear our public interest in renewable energy, not in coal. Make sure that you hear our interest in low-cost electricity, which means not coal. And make sure that Hydro One, if they do acquire Avista, that they're prepared to, one, satisfy all the costs that have come, that will be incurring over the next several decades, likely, in cleaning up the pollution that Colstrip has caused, but also that Hydro One is prepared to make the investments in renewable energy that we're going to be needing in the future.
You know, it's always a little concerning when you think that this public utility serving a big area is going to be owned by a foreign entity. And I don't know if that plays into the decision at all. But is there an opportunity for the PUCs to place actual stipulations that Hydro One would have to meet if they do proceed with this acquisition?
Yeah. So the commission may attach conditions to its authorization of the acquisition by Hydro One.
And that's a place maybe where citizens could advocate for certain things that are important to them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. This, of course, affects everybody around here that gets electricity from Avista. So this is very relevant to us, and it's mm-hmm. good to know that we have some groups that are advocating for the citizens' interests on this particular issue. And we have more to talk about, but we're going to take a short break. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the morning show on KRFY 88.5. And we're talking this morning about coal power and energy topics, specifically about a coal plant called Colstrip in Montana. It's in eastern Montana that is kind of on its last legs, we think. It's being retired. And we're going to come back and talk more about that with our friends from the ICL. But first, we're going to take a three-minute musical break and listen to a song by Danya Clarine. That's a local musician. It's called He's a Cat. So we'll be right back. And that is Danya Clarine with, title of that one is He's a Cat. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. And she's a local musician. She's just great music. You can catch her around town occasionally. And you are listening to the KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie. And Susie?
And we have guests in the studio. We've been talking with Matt Nykiel and Emily Cleveland from the Idaho Conservation League. And we've really been talking about a plant, a coal generating plant in Montana, eastern Montana, called Colstrip. It's the biggest western contributor to greenhouse gases in the western part of the United States. And you explained earlier that there were four units, and two of them have dates to be closed.
That's right.
And why are they closing? What are those dates, and why are they closing?
That's a great question.
Yeah, so the first two units, the oldest ones, one and two, are scheduled to be retired in 2022. And that's the result of a settlement agreement that was reached because under the Clean Air Act, certain electric facilities that emit air pollution were grandfathered in. They said, you're grandfathered in, you don't have to make any changes right now, but as time goes on and as your facility ages, you're going to need to modify and update your facility so you have the proper pollution controls. That wasn't done at units one and two. And so when the time came, they didn't have the proper pollution controls. They weren't following. They had to follow the rules, and they decided it was going to be more expensive to follow the rules than to keep operating. So they chose to stop operating. It's going to retire in 2022. And that's a fate of many coal-fired power plants across the country.
It's just pretty much a business decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And what were the results of that much pollution in that area? How was it living in Colstrip?
Yeah. That's a great question. So there's obviously, there's a lot of air pollution that's associated with coal plants, and oftentimes there's expensive scrubbers that they can put on to try and filter some of that out. But I think in the case of one and two, there's a lot of different compounds, NOx, and what are some of the other things that were coming out?
Yeah, sulfur dioxide.
Sulfur dioxide. Mm-hmm. Things that are really nasty to be breathing in. So that is something that is, there's a huge detrimental effect on people who are living in that area. And then not to mention just the water issue. So, coal is mined. It's a layer. And if anyone's ever had a Brita water filter, you have those coal filters. Coal is also a great, it holds water. And so in a lot of cases where the coal seam is, the aquifer is right there too. And so a lot of this mining just ripped the aquifer out of this area. So surrounding ranches, they have had, you know, perennial streams and ponds that don't exist anymore. And so their way of life is crumbling out from underneath them because of this coal mining operation that's happening miles away. And not to mention just the pollution that's left behind by these plants. So there's these, you know, the ash that's created from burning the coal, they store that in ponds. And those coal ash ponds have been leaking into the groundwater. So at this point, the town of Colstrip imports their water from the Yellowstone River, 30 miles away. They can't drink the water there anymore. And so it's really they're living in a Superfund site, basically. I mean, a Superfund site is specific to, you know, when there aren't sufficient funds to cover the cleanup, but that's where it seems like it's heading. And so, you know, some of the utility companies, for Puget Sound, for example, have already committed to providing a sum of money to help with that cleanup and earmarking those funds. And that's something that we would like to see Avista do, because we feel that we've been benefiting off of this electricity for years, and it's been devastating this area, and that there's a responsibility to help, you know, make clean that up and restore it to at least some stable state. It will never be able to be what it once was. And, you know, for those ranchers who have lost water resources, that will probably never return. But yeah, I think that there's a responsibility for us to be able to clean up part of what has been created. And that's something that we're hoping that Hydro One will take on as part of a negotiation of their acquisition, is help take on some of this cleanup. Yeah, not only is there incredible pollution created, but it's also just, you know, our money is going in every month to prop up these big, old, dirty plants. And so, you know, we're spending millions of dollars in infrastructure improvements to keep these plants running safely. So it's not just, you know, we're not just getting energy. We're not just paying for the energy. We're also paying to keep these plants running. It's like having a big, old, huge tractor that you have to, you know, put parts into every month to keep it going. You know, you're getting something out of it, but you're also putting so much into it that there's a question of where is this money being spent, and is it the best use of our money?
You know, everyone wants to have a say in what's going on, and when you hear things like this, some of our listeners might wonder, well, what can I do about it? And I did notice on the website, on ICL's website, that there's a petition, a Hydro One Avista petition. Can you tell us about this?
Yeah. So we are, this acquisition, this Hydro One coming in and buying Avista, it opens up a possibility where we might be able to bring some terms to the negotiating table and see if they're willing to take them on as part of the agreement, and through the Public Utilities Commission and as party to the case, the ICL would intervene. And so we are asking for three things from Hydro One. We're asking that if they come into our community, they agree to these three things. One would be to end ratepayer funding for the dirty and inexpensive Colstrip coal plant by no later than 2025. We feel that that's an appropriate timeline for them to be able to transition to another source of energy for supplying that 10% that we're currently getting.
You can't clarify on that. They're going to be closing two units anyways by 2022.
You bring up a good point. Yeah. So Avista doesn't own any of units one and two. So that retirement date doesn't affect Avista at all. Avista's 10% ownership, 15% ownership, excuse me, is in units three and four. Right. And those are the two units that don't have a firm retirement date yet. And so we would like to see Avista put a firm retirement date on units three and four. And several of the other owners have already committed to retirement dates, and we want Avista to step up and put a retirement date on there and start providing some leadership on that.
Yeah, and there's like a little bit of nuance with like the other utilities, whether they're making plans to retire it in a certain time frame.
Right.
They haven't set a date specifically.
Right. But there's some legislation. So in Oregon, they're legislatively required not to supply coal energy. So they will not be supplying Colstrip coal energy to Oregon customers by that date, 2030.
And you were talking about the three things that
this petition. Thank you, Susie. Yeah.
So number two.
So number two, thanks. So Puget Sound Energy has set aside $10 million to transition workers at Colstrip into the renewable energy economy. And we think that's also really important because these folks have been working hard and have built their lives around supplying us with energy. And there's still a huge opportunity to supply energy. We have these transmission lines going from a place in eastern Montana, which has huge solar and wind potential, to a huge energy demand market on the West Coast in Idaho, Washington, Oregon. So, you know, I think that it's important that we help these workers out and transition them into the renewable energy economy so that we can continue to get a product from eastern Montana and that those folks can continue to have a livelihood around supplying in the energy economy. And the third issue is setting aside funds now to cover the environmental cleanup costs from Avista's share of the coal ash pollution and the groundwater contamination at Colstrip. And so, you know, we think that we have a responsibility to make sure that we follow through on cleaning up what, you know, is the footprint of our use of electricity over the years. And so other utility companies are stepping up to that responsibility. And we think that it's important for Hydro One and Avista to earmark those funds now and make sure that they know exactly how much it's going to be required and that they're going to be able to meet those requirements. And then also recognize that those costs will likely increase as time goes on, the longer the plant is in operation. So just making sure that they're looking at the whole picture and recognizing those cleanup costs as part of the cost of Colstrip.
And this is a petition that's available for people to sign right now.
That's right. And it sounds pretty confusing the way we just went through it. But if you go to idahoconservation.org, you click on our actions and issues, you can see our take action. And it's called Get North Idaho Off Coal. And the petition's right there. We're collecting signatures. And this is an effort that that our partners are doing in Washington as well. So we're hoping that we can gather as many signatures as possible. And we're going to deliver those to the CEOs of Avista and Hydro One.
I'm curious, you may or may not know the answer to this question, but our other electrical provider here is Northern Lights, and do they source some of their electricity from coal plants, or where does that come from? Do you know?
To my knowledge, Northern Lights doesn't get energy from Colstrip or coal plants, but to be honest, I don't know their energy mix with certainty.
Mm-hmm. I thought of that question because you mentioned get North Idaho off of coal.
That's so, right. Yeah. And Avista, you know, as the largest public utility for the North Idaho region, we see Avista as the biggest bite out of the apple that we want to try and clean up their energy portfolio. And there's a lot of small co-ops, and they might be buying energy off the market from different sources. But these bigger public utilities have the biggest impact on the coal footprint that Idaho is using.
You know, going through your website, there's so much information. I really highly recommend if you want to get informed from what ICL is researching, Idaho Conservation League, and all of the different actions and issues that you're taking. It's a great website, and that is idahoconservation.org.
Yeah, and I was just, this is another point that kind of tags along with the petition that Emily, our petition that Emily brought up, and some points we have in there, is the idea in my mind, one way I think about it is, I think we're all old enough here to remember Kodak and having a Kodak moment. Kodak moment used to mean one thing, and now it means quite another thing because of the progression that the company took over time. At one point in history, Kodak was a huge company employing thousands and thousands of people. And then with the advent of digital cameras, they plummeted. They didn't adapt.
We should mention for our younger listeners that Kodak made film for cameras.
Thanks for that. So they made film. And film transitioned to digital cameras, and Kodak didn't see that. Well, they saw it coming, but they didn't adapt.
They didn't believe it would be such a huge switch up in the way people took pictures, and it turned out it was absolutely huge. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And right, so they had some notice, and they didn't take action and adapt. And it resulted in a lot of hardship on people. They employed thousands and thousands of people in the town of Rochester, where they're headquartered. And at one point, I think they maxed around 60,000 workers, and that dropped dramatically. Today, I think they fluctuate somewhere around 1,600. And this right now is sort of Colstrip's Kodak moment. They see where energy is going, and by not making plans to go there and to adapt and change, they're leading these workers on. The people who are working in Colstrip, they're letting them hang on to this form of energy that's not going to last, and that's not helpful to their environment, their community, and that doesn't produce as affordable electricity as a lot of other sources. And so it's just really important to recognize this Kodak moment. This is a chance for Avista to adapt and move into the future, like become part of the 21st century, and also be responsible and help the people that it relies on to produce that energy to adapt into the future. So it's just a point to bring up.
You know, I the example I usually use is that we don't wear buffalo robe coats anymore because there aren't any buffalo hunters and you don't hunt buffalo. But once upon a time, that was a big thing. So yeah, things change, and the companies and the people that earn their livelihoods have to change along with that, of course. Some things you just can't fight.
And the good news is the transition, as you've mentioned, Emily, from coal as a workplace to alternative energy or something else is not only going to be subsidized and helped with, but the jobs are there. Mm-hmm. There's actually probably more jobs in alternative energy mm-hmm. or clean energy.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people are, you know, they're hearing from leaders that the future of coal is still out there and that, you know, the golden age is yet to come. And so a lot of people are still holding on pretty fiercely to the idea that those jobs are going to be there for them and for their kids and for their grandkids, when in reality, it's like Matt said, you know, the writing is on the wall, and companies need to step up and have responsibility and look out for their employees and realize that it's time to transition and adapt. I mean, right now there are investors who are interested in starting these renewable projects, and it just needs to have the momentum of the community behind it. And at this point, you know, there still needs to be, people are still holding on to that hope that there's a future for coal. And so hopefully our leadership can start to encourage that moving in the right direction.
We're about to run out of time here. So Matt Nikiel and Emily Cleveland from the Idaho Conservation League, we've been talking about the Colstrip plant in particular, but also coal and energy issues. Any last things that you would like to let the listeners know?
I think one last point would be that some people can kind of question whether it's possible. And it absolutely is. When Ontario decided that they wanted to get off coal, they made it happen. And in 6 years, they grew their wind power by 1,600 megawatts. Units 3 and 4 of Colstrip only produce 780 megawatts each.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's heartening.
the future is arriving, basically. So thanks again for coming in and letting people know about this. A very important issue. Mm-hmm. We're ratepayers. We're involved in it, whether you see it right in front of you or not.
That's right. I think the way it's going now, we all need to get involved is what I'm hearing. And I want to thank you for carrying this for Idaho. This idea. And
we'll mention just a couple things here coming up at KRFY, that tomorrow on the morning show, the host is going to be Jack Peterson. He's going to be Lonesome Jack tomorrow. His guest will be the East Bonner County Library Lifelong Learning Program Coordinator, Mike Bauer. And they're going to be talking about volunteer tutoring at the library. That's at 8 a.m. tomorrow on 88.5 KRFY.
And next week on the morning show, you can join on Tuesday, February 27th. Phil Huff and Julie Calamine will be back. Their guests will be Tom Dabrowski and Bob Turner from the American Long Distance Hiking Association. They'll be talking about the 4th annual North Idaho Ruck that's coming up. And next Wednesday, who are our guests, Chris? Who do we have coming in?
We have Michelle Murphy and Jennifer McDonald. They're going to be talking about a very worthy, pretty new organization called Food for Our Children. They're doing good work in our community to get make sure that some of our underprivileged children are getting healthy diets. And that, again, is next Wednesday, February 28th, 88.5 KRFY, right here where you're listening. I do want to mention something else that's happening up next Wednesday. Once again, there's going to be a panel discussion on the Newport Smelter. That's at 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. in the Panda Theater. Public's welcome to come, hear the facts about the smelter, also discuss potential impacts. There are going to be representatives from the Department of Ecology in Washington, Department DEQ here in Idaho, as well as ICL. Matt will be speaking, and a number of other folks. So that's 5:30 to 7:30 Newport Smelter panel discussion at the Panda Theater.
If you want to have more information and be informed, it's a golden opportunity next Wednesday night.
It is. And you can get information on that and all the things going on in town, again, on our website, KRFY.org. And we got about a minute. Susie, what do you have to tell folks?
Have a great day. If you only got to hear part of this interview and you want to hear all of it, you can go to our website. We did record it. It will be a podcast up on our website under podcast probably within a couple hours.
Yeah, it's KRFY.org. And we always like to throw out a shout that this is a community-supported radio station, and we only exist because we have donations from listeners and very important underwriters, the businesses community in here in town that contribute to the radio station. So if you're a listener, if you appreciate what you hear on KRFY, we can certainly use your support.
And are they still doing the media survey with the reader?
Yes, actually, okay. There's still a local media survey that's happening. You could connect to it if you go to sandpointonline.com or sandpointreader.com. That survey is going to continue through this week, and then Monday is the last day for that. If you haven't logged on and given your opinion about the local media of which KRFY is part of, the survey intent is to just find out what people are listening to, what kind of media they like locally here. We're talking about the local media. And ways the local media could serve people better. And again, you could connect to that if you go to sandpointonline.com or sandpointreader.com. And hopefully you'll say that you listen to KRFY.
That's what we're hoping. And thanks for listening today to The Morning Show with Chris and Susie on this beautiful Wednesday morning.
And we're going to go out with a song by Bridges Home. That's Dave and Tammy Gunner. It's called Plain to See. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you here next week.